Okay, hello. So I am Lori Martello. I am a grad student in the spring semester of 2021, and I am interviewing Alvaro Zarrios. If you'd like to introduce yourself, Professor Rios.
Sure. Hi, my name is Alvaro Zarrios. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm an associate professor in playwriting at the in the theater department at the Peck School of the Arts.
Awesome. And how long have you been doing theater in Milwaukee, around Milwaukee, and like based some of your playwriting in the Milwaukee area?
Well, I came to the Milwaukee area in 2006. So that's kind of when I started becoming more aware of the community. Mm-hmm. And becoming more involved in terms of that. And even my wife, Michelle Lopez Rios, she was the reason why we moved to Milwaukee. She was hired by UWM, working for the theater department. But she and I also had our own theater company, and we continue to have our own theater company. And so we figured we wanted to do what we did in Houston, because that's where we were originally coming from. We wanted what we did there to try to do in Milwaukee. And so one of the first projects that we worked on was a piece called Nuestra Voz, Nuestra Historia, Our Voice, Our Story, where we had free voice and writing classes for the Latino community in Milwaukee. And we got to meet some great people, you know, some people who were college students, but some who are just definitely just part of the community. And we just kind of had, and I think it was over the summer. It was funded by the Roberto Hernandez Center. So that's how we figured if we were gonna do theater in Milwaukee, we felt like it was most important to not just do something that we did in Houston in terms of like, oh, let's do one of our plays, but mm-hmm. let's get to know the community first. And so we felt like this would be a great way to get to know the community and create theater. You know, do what we do best in terms of creating theater, working with the community, devising, writing, and my wife was directing the piece. And so that was kind of the beginnings of developing and becoming a part of the theater community here in Milwaukee. Well, in Milwaukee.
So the theater community in Milwaukee, we're talking, are we strictly talking about like those on Broadway in the Third Ward, like Starlight, and the Chamber Theater? Are there other theaters in the Milwaukee area that you work with, or are those primarily the theaters in your community that you work with?
Wow, that's a really good question. I'm glad it's good to kind of differentiate. So like, yeah, those theaters that you think about in terms of like those that are on Broadway, like you've got Milwaukee Chamber Theater, Renaissance Theater Works, and then you have farther down, you have Next Act. Those are more of the, definitely the, what, in terms of theater, the professional level in terms of the, they're usually producing plays that are, that have either been published or that have been done on Broadway or done in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The type of theater that my wife and I were doing is very community-based. So, yes, that we do work with on various projects, or even sometimes we work in the traditional sense. You know, work with some of these theaters such as Milwaukee Chamber Theater, First Stage, Milwaukee Rep. But a lot of what our stuff has always been grounded in is creating community engaged work, basically mm-hmm. doing the stuff that those other theaters don't do. And it's not that they don't want to do. I mean, I'm sure they're interested in it. But that was more interesting to us than doing a traditional play, traditional in the sense of just doing a Shakespeare play or doing some play that just got off Broadway or stuff like that. Our interest is doing theater that really either specifically speaks to a community or is about a community, and sometimes even creating work that with the community. And that's something you don't see these other theaters do in terms of, especially when you look at their seasons, that's not what they do. That's not their mission. Mm-hmm. But so our theater, the theater that we do is in a different sense. I mean, I try not to differentiate between those. I mean, even though I said it, like, they're the professionals, more in the sense, because I mean, we're professionals and we still get paid for what we do. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's more in the sense that we create community-based, community-engaged theater, and compared to those other theaters where their theater is really about producing plays that are, you know, typically published already, that are usually, you know, a lot of the times the playwrights are dead, or the playwrights don't reflect diversity. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where we're, I'm glad you asked that question, because it does help differentiate in terms of like what type of theater we do. But right. Then again, like I said, we work with those theaters in doing those types of plays. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll write a play that'll get produced at like First Stage in Milwaukee there. My wife was recently in a one-person show for Milwaukee Chamber mm-hmm. Theater. So we kind of try to work in all different levels in terms of theater. I mean, ultimately, if it's theater, we'll do it. You know, I mean, it comes down to like, what are we interested in? Mm-hmm. What stories are we interested in telling?
And so when you decide to do a community, like a very community-based theater production, what is the process? How do you get involved with that community? Do you just like, you know, start with internet searches and go from there? Or do you primarily like to do face-to-face? I mean, you know, since the COVID, do you like to do face-to-face interactions and really get in there? Or what is yours and your wife's approach to community-based theater?
First, it is, I mean, what we have learned is that in order to do community-engaged theater where, like, when you develop theater with the community, either if it's going to be a play about that community or you're doing something with the community to create it, you have to build trust. Mm. Because so many of these communities are so used to theaters and other arts organizations coming in and saying, let's do theater. And it's more about them taking from them and not really kind of working with them. And so we mm-hmm. feel like one of the best ways to try it is to build trust. And so, as I was mentioning, when we were developing Nuestra Voz, Nuestra Historia, we realized, like, what are we giving to the community? Like, we want to create mm-hmm. theater with them, but first we got to gain their trust. So we've got to give to them. And so we felt like, why don't we create these like voice classes and writing classes for anyone who is really interested? And the goal wasn't, I mean, it wasn't that, you know, it's like everything that we create, we're going to perform. It was, we're hoping that these voice classes will, number one, help you in your own life as mm-hmm. a, you know, whatever, you know, depending on whatever job or whatever was that applied to that person's life. But the same thing with writing, in the terms of, I always feel like writing is very, I mean, it's very useful in the sense that, I mean, it can be very therapeutic, even just writing your own story. And I feel like sometimes it's helpful that some people don't get into writing. It's not that they're interested. It's just that they don't know. It's not that they're not interested. They just don't know how to start. Mm. And so I felt like, how, if we can lower the barrier in the sense that we can make these classes that we do for free, and they can come whenever they want, and they can take from it whatever they want, and they can decide, you know what, some of this is for me and some of it isn't. Mm-hmm. And we felt like that was one of the ways for us to get to know the people who wanted to create something and to get to know the community. And that's how we got to know, like, the basically, you know, number one, where all the Latinos live, like, you know, I mean, it's because that was also, you know, something trying to figure out. So that's definitely the first step is gaining trust. So and because, you know, like I said, we are funded by the Roberto Hernandez Center, definitely tied to UWM. When we were making flyers about our workshops, because we wanted our workshops to be on Saturdays. We knew that it was going to be during the day on Saturdays, making it accessible to anybody who was obviously off on Saturdays. And we put flyers around the university, but we also realized, like, if we just leave them around the university, that's who we're going to just pull from. So we went down to the south side, and we left flyers at the grocery stores and kind of and the United Community Center, and left them in various places in the sense that we felt like, where would the community go? And we felt like the grocery store was a really good place to put them up. So, you know, in El Rey, we were putting them up there, and trying to find other places where we could, and this was like, you know, pre-Facebook, right?
Yeah, right.
And so it was finding those places. And I mean, that's kind of how we worked in terms of connecting with the community. I mean, it's various other times we've been very fortunate to where we already have that specific community. Either we'll work with the university where they'll say, hey, you know what, we have these group of students, and some of them might not even be theater students, but we have these group of students who are interested in developing something. Mm-hmm. We would like to bring you down to come develop a project with them. So, I mean, those are that's another type of what we've done. One community based project that I did, which is more of a little different, but still, I kind of used the inspiration of what my wife and I did, was I had worked with the architecture school. Mm-hmm. They had went into the Washington Park neighborhood, mm-hmm. and they had interviewed various people within that community. And so what I wanted to do, so because they had already gained the trust of that community and they already collected all these different stories, I felt like that part of the process I didn't have to do, that I was wondering if I could figure out if I could turn it, like, their interviews into a play. Mm. And so that was a different type of work that definitely was still about the community, because once I wrote it to a play, we did a reading of the play in Washington Park, okay. At the Urban Ecology Center. Mm-hmm. And we wrote letters, like we wrote hand, I had everybody in the cast write hand letters to everyone who the interview we utilized, and invited them to the reading to come and hear the play. Cause we wanted feedback here to see what they thought about, like, what we were doing, because we were utilizing their words,
right?
But it obviously had been manipulated to cultivate, to kind of create a through line story. And we had like three or four families show up, and it was great to be able to, like, I mean, to see, I mean, I think it was, I mean, it was great to be able to see, like, the students interact with the real life people who they were portraying, and realizing that sometimes for them, it's about, especially when those who create theater, it's about creating a character. But for some, they realize, like, sometimes the person who they're portraying is actually a real person. Mm-hmm. And so what, you know, they've really got to think about the choices that they make as a performer, like how they're going to represent that person with respect, hopefully, right. You know, and so, yeah, so those are kind of different levels that we've done in terms of creating theater about the community, like, you know, that really, theater that is engaged with the community, about the community, and mm-hmm. stuff that, like I said, is performed, actually created with the community, so right. The idea is that they all perform too.
Mm-hmm. So in your teaching as a playwright professor at UWM, when you're teaching and, you know, instructing, and like, here's, you know, how you might want to go, what do you say to your students if they profess an interest in writing community, writing for a community, writing about a community? What kinds of things do you teach that would, you know, promote this building of trust, this, you know, relationship between the theater and the playwright and the community that they're trying to, you know, genuinely portray, as you just stated?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I mean, the one thing I really try and stress with them is, because, you know, some of them, I actually have very few that have actually expressed an interest in creating community plays that are community engaged. A lot of them want to just write, they just want to write plays, and that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. And that's typically what I teach in my playwriting classes. But I also leave that door open in terms of to talk about community engaged work and tell them that where whatever community you live in, especially because a lot of them come from small towns, I'm like, you have the trust of that community already because you're from there. That might be a great story to tell. Like if you ever wanted to create a play about your community, because it's someplace where you're from, you know who the first person who you can go interview, you know, go to your parents first mm-hmm. and just ask them, you know, how did we end up here? Right. You know, and then go from there and start connecting the various people in the neighborhood. And just first, I always feel like it's good to just collect the stories in the sense that maybe it might be like a few monologues, you know. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes some students want to take on the big project and turn it, because of what they've seen as a play, they want to turn it into like a 2 to 3 hour like thing. And I'm like, you got to start small, you know. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with, you know, interviewing, let's say you interview 5 people and let's say you get like maybe like a 5 to 10 minute monologue from each one of them based on their interview, and try that out and see mm-hmm. Try it out in the sense of either if it's something for them to perform for themselves. You know, I'm really, my goal is to try to really get my students, like, number one, to create their own theater. Because mm-hmm. a lot of them, not a lot of them, but some have, when they graduate, they want to start their own theater company, which I think is, oh, great. But then they want to produce plays. And talking about the business of theater, whenever you want to produce a play, you can't just produce it. You actually, if the play has been published, or even if the playwright is alive, you have to pay that playwright. And mm-hmm. there's no standard amount of what you pay. It all depends on the play and, mm-hmm. and who the playwright is. So they're already there. They have to invest money into trying to raise money to produce this play. Mm-hmm. Which is why I try to push them in a different direction and like create your own work, you know, try mm-hmm. and create something, and especially if you create something about your community, the people in the community are going to want to come see it because they want to know the stories that you're going to tell. Mm-hmm. And that makes it something, I think, a little more appealing to that community. I always tell my students, it's like, you know, I would rather go see a play that they wrote about their community, you know, in terms of either their friends or their town they're from, or maybe something connected. But something original, then go see another production of Mice and Men or Romeo and Juliet. I mean, I'm fine with that, but like so many different people are doing that kind of stuff that I'm like, originality, there's something cool about it, and not worry about once we do it, am I going to be famous or I'm going to make a lot of money? I mean, I didn't get into theater to make a lot of money. I think anybody who gets in the theater to make a lot of money is they're in for an interesting lesson. if they're really into theater and they want to create and tell stories and original stories, like these are the paths that they can take, and they can take these skills in terms of writing plays and maybe there's stories that have been told in their community that they can take those stories and adapt into plays. So that's also what I teach, is I teach students how to adapt, such as folk tales, I teach them the beginning processes on how to turn those into plays.
Okay.
And so what I'm hoping is that they take those skills and create their own. So then when they want to start their own theater company, they can create their own work and they don't have to worry about paying a playwright, which is another cost they don't have to worry about, and try and create something and hopefully do it as minimal as possible. I mean, I feel like some of the best storytellers are those who can tell stories without relying on even playwrights, but who can do it without relying on extravagant costumes or you know, an actual set or lights, you know. You know, can they do it? Can they do it that can be performed in a community center or in a basement? Mm-hmm. Or in like Spades Plaza, you know, can they do that? And which then I try and relate to those stories. When I was developing my own work, we were first trying them out. We were performing them at various universities, at some of the festivals. We would just try stuff. stuff out anywhere just to see what kind of reactions we got, and continue to figure, hone our stories. And like, we didn't worry about, you know, a millions of props or a set that we had to keep lugging around. It was about, can we do this anywhere? And that's, and that's, yeah, that's kind of my aesthetic, and that's kind of what I try and teach my students.
And then, so what was the reaction, the response, do you think, of those stories from the community? So what did the, what were the community attitudes like when you had these productions? And do you think that communities will be interested in pre-COVID in stories about COVID in their personal lives during COVID? Do you think that that response would be wanted by the community?
Ooh, sure, that's a really good question. So to answer your first part, we got some really great responses. I mean, when we did Nuestra Voz, Nuestra Historia at the university, at UWM, we did it, we did two sets of performances. We did one at UWM in the theater, in a traditional theater space, but then we also took it down to the, it's called the Walker Center for the, Walker Center for the Arts. And not in the space that they're in now, but they were in a different space on National. But we found a space in the community, and we performed it there too, because we figured that that's also the thing about doing community engaged work, that if you're going to do a theater about a community, you should try to actually do that theater in the community. And we had people who had like, I can't say it was sold out, because it's not like we sold tickets. We made it, we wanted anybody who would, who could come, come. So it was free to the community. And so they were packed both evenings that we performed at the that Walker Center for the Walker Center for the Arts. Walker's Point. I know it was Walker's Point Center for the Arts or something like that. I think that's what's called WPCPA. But so we had, and then we, you know, we get emails of people just like, you know, I've never seen anything like that. Like, we really love these stories. And, you know, it was just about, I mean, it was these stories about these various Latinos growing up in Milwaukee, you know, from one who is a veteran and now a student at UWM to one woman who moved from Panama to Milwaukee and her experience. And another one who was, she was, it was her story of coming to Milwaukee and being undocumented. And we realized that we had tapped into something. This was a need that wasn't being catered to in terms of the traditional theater community here. And it was the same thing when doing the Washington Park play. We made sure that anybody from the Washington Park community could come for free to see the play anytime they wanted, even if they wanted to come more than once. And we got so many great like emails just about, you know, how much they love the play. One of the guys, one of the characters in the play, gosh, I can't remember his name, but he's actually the owner of the Amaranth Bakery in Washington Park. And he came to see the play, and he loved it. And it was great to just, you know, get, I mean, that's the feedback that means most to us in terms of like for the fact that they'll come, and then the community will come, and then maybe they'll come again and they'll bring another family member or someone. And we made sure to give them all printed copies of the script. So they had the script. So we felt like what we tried to do was to leave them with something, that it wasn't just about taking away from the community. It's what can we leave with you? So they all have a copy of the script. And I would think that many communities would also want stories, you know, theater to really kind of to document what, you know, these COVID experiences. I think we might need a little time away from it first, you know. I think sometimes whenever we write about certain subjects, we need some distance from it before we can take them on. And because I don't know how depending on how soon people are going to want to watch stories, you know, certain COVID stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you which ones people are going to want to watch. We are going to want to watch it. I mean, I feel like we need, there will be a time where we, or maybe this is what I'm trying to say. Theater does a really good job about creating moments, creating moments that happen in a specific piece of time, specific time period. But a lot of times what it takes is we need some distance from that actual time period. So we are going to see theater. I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, some people are creating stuff on various different levels. But I think it all depends on, you know, the theater, mm-hmm. who you're catering to and what they're going to want to see. You know, I mean, I had a theater that commissioned me to write a play, to write a short play. And it definitely was set within, you know, this time period in terms of COVID and what we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. But it was also kind of it was more of a comedy. It wasn't about, you know, somebody dying of COVID. I mean, mm-hmm. this piece was actually inspired by my own story and other friends' stories about how we become, how we as we get older, we become the parents of our parents. And so I had heard stories about many friends who were, it was hard for, like, you know, when quarantine was going down, their parents were still going out. And then they're just trying to, like, you know, they call their parents, they're like, "Mom, you need to stay home." And they're like, "No, I'm not going to stay home." Right. And so, so I tried to find, like, the comedic sense. Obviously, there's some danger in there. I mean, there's a reason why they wanted to stay home. But so I wrote this short piece about this woman who calls her mom and says, "Mom, where are you?" I mean, that's actually the name of the play. It's called "Where Are You?" And she calls her mom because she goes to her mom's house and her mom's not there. And mom's like, "Well, how do you know I'm not home?" She's like, "Well, I'm at your house. You're not here." I come to find out, like, mom is in a car with someone, and mom won't tell her who she's with, but they're in a car and they're going somewhere, and mom will not tell her where she's going. But mom says, "You know, I do have, you know, and I know you're worried about it, but I have protection." And then, you know, she pulls on a mask, right? And so, but as the conversation goes on, we get to see the parallels of the mom bringing back up experiences that when the daughter who was calling her, when the daughter was younger, and she would try and get a hold of the daughter, and the daughter was out running around on the streets and doing her thing, and it was hard for mom to keep her home. Mm-hmm. And so now it's kind of the roles are reversed. The daughter is trying to keep the mom at home, and the mom is like, you know, "This is not the life I want to live."
Right.
And so that piece is definitely, you know, it's definitely reflective of this time, and it's a short piece. I don't see it being produced by, you know, any of the big theaters or anything like that, but so I feel like playwrights are creating stuff that definitely mm-hmm. are about experiences, and I'm sure communities would be interested in having their own stories told. But I think right now it's got to take time to, like, you know, we got to get some distance from it. And then mm-hmm. it's finding the right, you know, it also comes down to the artist and coming in those communities. And like I said, I mean, if they don't have trust of the community, I feel like that's the necessary aspect first. That if you can't get the trust, mm-hmm. or if you're not, you're only going to do a disservice to the community, and you're only going to create stuff that is, yeah, that it really isn't something even the community is going to want to see. And I continue to see that. And unfortunately, where artists have been brought in to write about a community, and they don't really have the trust of the community. And I feel like will always be the important aspect. And right now that's going to be harder, you know, in terms of people mm-hmm. getting vaccinated. You got to make sure people are vaccinated, or at least in terms of the level of, like, for artists to want to come there and be like, you know, their own responsibility and saying, "Hey, I've got to be able to not protect myself, but I've got to be protective of the people I'm interviewing."
Mm-hmm.
And And so not to make it political, but in a sense that like science says that we're safer if I'm the vaccinated than the person I'm interviewing, I'm interacting as vaccinated compared to if we're both not vaccinated. And so I feel like those are the things that are the early necessary steps before even any of this other stuff needs to go on.
Right. So those necessary steps that come before writing, what about, or before, sure, you know, the production gets going, or, you know, before you even start. So what about like after that step? So when you start to get into, you know, the production and it's forming and things, how do you see that COVID is going to affect that? Do you see that they're going to try and do you feel that there's a need to ignore it? Or do you think that is it opening up opportunities for like different venues or ideas or?
Sure. Yeah. Like yeah, that's a really good question. So COVID has really, I mean, obviously I don't wish this whole pandemic and everything on anyone, but I think we've learned a lot of things from it. And the great thing about theater is that theater adapts. And theater has adapted. I mean, we are now seeing Zoom, what we call Zoom theater. Mm-hmm. And so something even like this, these two squares, like, I mean, I was hired by a theater to create something like this, just specifically for Zoom. And so we're starting to see that where it is more accessible. So mm-hmm. it's possible that you could have, depending on what kind of relationship the artist has with the community, they could first start doing interviews with people through Zoom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even recording, collecting their stories. And then depending on what kind of piece they're creating, either if it's something that artist is going to perform, or maybe something that they want to get the community perform, they can do it all on Zoom just like this. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the great thing. You don't need a space in terms of the traditional sense. COVID is affecting doing performances in person, mm-hmm. but it's still happening. People are rethinking that, hey, you know what, maybe we don't need to be inside a theater. We can actually do this outside.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I continue to encourage my students is like, you know, first think about like what is it that they could do in like Spates Plaza or in Downer Woods. I've always wanted to do a play in Downer Woods. and I think this is the COVID is making us rethink our spaces. Okay. And I mean, I was just reading an article about how some comedy stand-up comedy places, because of New York is how New York is shutting down some streets to traffic, and now they're just making them pedestrian walkways, that comedy clubs are basically where they can shut down their streets, and they'll put the tables out in the middle of the streets, and they'll do the stand-up comedy right there. And I mean, that's the essence of theater, right? Is we can take it outside. And I mean, that's where theater started. It was outside before we took it inside. Obviously, it's different in the Midwest. You can do it outside during the summer, but during the winter, you got to rethink this. But it definitely is affecting that. We're going to, I mean, I would think that, you know, any artist creating theater within a community, they need to, they have that responsibility to figure that out. Like, are we going to do something? They should do something that doesn't risk the health of that community. Mm-hmm. So they should think about doing something outside in the community, either in a park. You know, I mean, there's so many open spaces. You can try that. And yes, some people are doing stuff inside, but they're not, obviously they're not at 100% capacity anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think recently UWM our theater department did do some production. I mean, I have to say, I'm not 100% sure because I'm on sabbatical right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost sure that there were productions where they sold tickets, but it was very limited in terms mm-hmm. of, they weren't, you know, obviously it wasn't, they weren't selling all the seats. They were selling just enough, like, either, I don't know if it was like 25% capacity or something mm-hmm. in that sense. So that's definitely also what how COVID has affected theater being presented now.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And then, excuse me, I just had a thought. And I just lost it. Sorry. So then your play that you wrote with First Stage, Unmuted, the virtual learning, can we talk a little bit about that in terms of how was it difficult to write a play and the communication with the director, the lyricist, I believe, Deborah.
The composer, yeah.
The composer lyricist, yes. How was that? How was trying to conduct and work with other theater departments and stuff during this? Was it difficult for the communication? Yeah. And did that, how did that feel?
Oh, it was a challenge. So, I mean, initially, so this was first brought to me by First Stage. They were interested in me creating some sort of virtual theater. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create a virtual musical, moreover, because I had never created one before. But then also, I wanted to work with Deborah Wicks LaPuma, who's the composer lyricist. And she's in Los Angeles. And I felt like if this is the perfect project to be able to do that, because we didn't need to be in the same space. Okay. We could do it through Zoom. And so initially the project started to where I had this idea and I kind of wrote out an outline and I sent it to her and she emailed it back. So we kind of emailed back and forth and then we talk on the phone and talk through Zoom. And so once we had the idea, it's like, okay, now we have to go into do a reading. And that's also the cool thing about Zoom, right, is that we don't have to be in the same space. So we did a reading. We worked for First Stage, and they hired the director, Anasquiz Vargas, who is actually based in Austin, Texas. So here I am in Chicago, Deborah's in on the west coast in California, Anna is in Austin, Texas, and all the performers who auditioned, we're all based in the Milwaukee area. Mm-hmm. So we have these four different parts that we're at. And doing the reading, there was no problem. It was once we got into rehearsals that were the challenges, because the one thing that we take for granted is Wi-Fi. Like, wow. Everybody has different Wi-Fi at different Wi-Fi capacities. Mm-hmm. And then there are always those challenges based on the type of whatever they're using, either it be some were using their phone, some were using an iPad. Mm. One we discovered really quickly, was that there would be challenges whenever using a Google Chromebook with Zoom. Mm. We always had challenge with that. And I don't know if it had to do anything with updates or whatever. Like, most of us aren't these, you know, in terms of computer savvy, and that's also what you need, right? And that's rarely what you need in theater. It's like, we can do this without somebody who doesn't know anything about, you know, a MacBook Air or a Google Chromebook, but we had to all have all that figured out.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the challenges. Sometimes during rehearsals, they would be reading their lines or start singing, and we'd lose one of them. Be like, we'd have eight actors, and then we'd end up, by the time rehearsal's over, we'd have six. Like, oh my gosh, it's really kicked out of Zoom. Mm-hmm. And the other challenge is that the way Zoom works is, let's say if we have five people singing right now, we're going to have a lot of cutting in and out. Mm. And so we knew we couldn't do it live. We had to record it. And so what we had was each one of the performers, they had to get their phones and they had to record the audio for their script on their phone and then email it to us. And then it would be all mixed together, which mm-hmm. is something I know nothing about. Thankfully, Deborah, the composer, knows so much about this.
Okay.
And she had to mix in all the different singing voices. Oof. So it was not just that. Then we had someone else, who worked with First Stage. His name was Colton. I can't remember his last name. But he did the recording on Zoom because he has to record everything that you see. Mm-hmm. We've got to mix that with the audio that Deborah has. So, and it would have been a lot easier if we would have just had a play that they're all talking, you know? Uh-huh. But because they're singing, that really affects how Zoom takes things in. And so it was so much of a big challenge. Mm-hmm. But even with that, like, that was a piece. This is a piece that definitely reflects the time of COVID right now, because it is it's about these kids taking school online and their experiences dealing with that. I have hopes that 3-4 years from now, even farther, that maybe even kids forget about that experience, that they don't have to, you know, that we'll be back to normal, whatever normal is, right? Mm-hmm. But that we won't be there. But what I'm hoping is that maybe even there might be a nostalgia, in the sense that, oh, you remember when we did that? And what I'm hoping is that this piece was created virtually, but I'm hoping that we can be able to maybe even one day expand it to a real, like, or an in-person musical, mm-hmm. specifically a set still during the COVID times, where some of it is about them taking class online, but it is also about these 8 characters and their own personal lives before they hop on the screen taking classes, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. That normalcy that you mentioned, and what aspects do you see maybe theater adapting to this new normalcy post-COVID? Are there certain things that you hope that theater will adapt to, having gone through a year and a half of the pandemic, and things that you'd like to see change from post or pre-COVID to post-COVID?
I think I don't think if COVID has anything to do with this, but I definitely do hope that theaters change in the sense that they do do more theater that reflects community. Mm-hmm. And it reflects their own communities that are diverse, mm-hmm. And doing theater that really represents the different voices of that every theater has in their own communities that have been ignored, and maybe it's not an active sense of them ignoring it, but they definitely have been producing more plays about that aren't about their community, and. So I'm hoping that's part of the thing that one of the changes that we get, because we are starting to see theaters kind of refigure how they're doing things, and even for some realizing that that maybe some of their practices aren't in the sense of that some of their practices aren't actually anti-racist practices. That maybe the practices definitely kind of promote more of this is how we used to do this. This is how it's been done.
Hierarchy, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. So we're hoping it kind of changes. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping we could, even though, I mean, some people don't like the whole virtual aspect of theater. You know, they say, well, this is TV, you know, this is film. And yet somebody brought a good point. Like, does theater change just because it's recorded? You know, it's still theater. Mm-hmm. Because I had heard somebody say, you know, does a baseball game change just because we see it on TV, right? I mean, baseball games were meant to be seen in person, but we see them on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. It's still a baseball game. So same thing with theater. Like, it was created to be seen in person and in a live with people, but we can record it and we can present it live. And the great thing about this too, and what I'm hoping every theater kind of takes, is that thing about Zoom theater is that it makes it more accessible to communities who would never have seen their play. You know, even if they offered their play once virtually, one day, you know, they don't have to do it the whole run, but one day if they did it, they would be able to reach communities who would never be able to see their work, you know, because they would be able to reach people who would see their play out of state, out of country, you know. And I think there's something cool about that, you know. I think that's one way for theater to continue to thrive and adapt, is for us to not just, yes, it's great to create theater about a community and for the community to come, but also maybe some of that stuff that we're creating is other people might want to see. Like I said, I'm not interested in seeing another Romeo and Juliet. or Mice and Men, or all these other, you know, no matter where it's streamed from. But let's say somebody's doing some sort of, you know, an original play in their own community. Maybe it's, you know, something either, you know, having to do with definitely reflecting what's going on today. Mm-hmm. You know, be it something in terms of, you know, something connected to police brutality, immigration, mm-hmm. You know, some of the water issues that they're dealing with in Flint. It's interesting to see that artists are taking on and telling these stories that don't always get told, or might be told in a unique way. I would love to be able to see that, and maybe I can't travel all the way over to see it, but if I had an opportunity to be able to log on and zoom in and watch it, I would, you know. So that's one thing I'm hoping, and some theaters are, they definitely are, they have realized that that's another, for them it's another revenue stream, and be like, oh, you know what, we can actually possibly make some money doing this. Great. I would hope that they can. And maybe it might give more exposure to the playwright and to the artists who are doing it. And I'm hoping more theaters realize that they can do this, that this isn't the substitute for theater, but it's something that they can also do.
Right.
So that maybe they have their season, they can still perform in person.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they might create something like Unmuted that could be recorded and that could be streamed to various schools, you know, in the small towns in Wisconsin or anywhere else, and they could still see it.
Mm-hmm.
And they could still, you know, use it either as a teaching tool, learn about theater, learn about telling stories in the Zoom box, you know?
Right. Yeah. Oh man, this has literally been such a great conversation. I love listening to you talk about this. This has been so awesome.
This is what I love to talk about. That's why.
Right. Yeah. It's been,
if I'm not writing, I'm talking about this.
That's so great. All right. Well, the last kind of question I have, is there anything you think that I haven't asked about theater in the times of a pandemic that you wish I would have asked, or are there thoughts that you have just popping up about theater during COVID?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, number one, I thank you for this opportunity to be able to talk about all this. I think the thing about, like I said, I mean, like, I don't wish what has happened on anyone, or even, you know, how this has all happened and rolled out. I'm hoping we in terms, especially the theater community, realize this is a great time for us to be able to reflect on practices that have been done in the past and how we can change them. Either be it not just storytelling, but then also within the creation of theater, but then it's also hiring practices and also how certain theaters engage with certain communities or haven't even tried engaging with certain communities, that maybe they'll start reevaluating and realizing that it is going to be a challenge to try and do business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just not going to want to come to the theater. They're going to be afraid, and that's totally valid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on either, you know, they're being vaccinated and whatever the laws are in that town. But hopefully these theaters will realize, like, if there's other ways that we can be able to kind of continue to tell stories. And maybe something like the subscription model might not be the best idea right now. Like, that's business as usual. And say, okay, we're going to do the subscription model again. Like, what are ways that they can kind of think that? And I don't have all the solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's worth thinking about. Like, how can we make theater accessible? How can we tell stories, and what stories do we want to tell?
Right.
And then if we're telling a story about a certain community, how involved is that community? You know, and should we be telling the story? Which I think is also definitely theater's problem sometimes, is sometimes there a theater organization or even an artist might be telling a story that maybe they shouldn't be telling, because maybe they haven't actually done their research, or They haven't gotten the trust, enough trust of that community. And it's so easy for, I don't know if easy is the right word, but it's easy for the theater community now to find out about theater companies and artists doing things that that they had the best interests at heart, but that they actually weren't doing enough, you know, that they weren't doing their diligence and working with the community enough. It's easy for us, the theater community, to find out because of Facebook and everything else and Twitter and all that. And so I think it's, even though it's always been important, I feel like definitely now it's important because people are going to find out, you know. And it shouldn't be business as usual. You know, it should be let's rethink all this. And what can we start changing? What practices can we, what communities have we not listened to that are that within our own community of our theater, you know, and what stories can we tell? And what artists can we work with who we haven't always worked with? I would feel like that's probably all I would have to say.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much, Professor Rios. Good luck writing and turning Luchadora, right?
Turning into a novel. Yes.
Yeah. That's going to be exciting. Well, I'll definitely be one of the first buyers of it.
Excellent. I just then need 999,999 more people. My goal is to sell 1 million copies. Just that'd be a nice, you know. I mean, if I could get $1 for each one of them, I could retire, right?
There you go. You know what? Aim high. Right out of the gate.
Yep.
You got 1 million.
That's my goal. Yeah. Sell 1 million. That's all I want.
All right. Well, sounds great. It was great to see you. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Bye. You too.